The big story, of course, today is the implications of what it's going to take, what the confirmation hearing for Sonia Sotomayor is going to be, the nominee of Barack Obama to replace David Souter on the Supreme Court. And let's recall Sotomayor talking about her very humble and reverential reaction to being nominated.
I chose to be a lawyer and ultimately a judge because I find endless challenge in the complexities of the law. I firmly believe in the rule of law as the foundation for all of our basic rights.
Sounds simple enough, yet there are endless challenges for senators and the people responsible for confirming Sotomayor in determining what it is about a justice that determines their qualifications for the high court. Joining us now is Jeffrey Rosen, law professor at George Washington University and legal affairs editor for The New Republic. His story in this week's magazine is called What's a Liberal Justice Now? Jeffrey Rosen, who joins us from Kansas City, Missouri, thanks so much for being on the program.
Thanks for having me.
What are the sources for determining the identity and the likely qualifications and behavior of a judge on the Supreme Court? You've got the opinions, you've got people who've worked with this justice, and you've also got a public record if that person is a public person. Anything else?
You know, it's so tricky because the greatest predictor of judicial performance turns out to be judicial temperament. And that's something that's very hard to discern from the written record. It's hard to define. It has to do with interactions with colleagues, humility, ability to compromise, to put the institution's interests before your own interests. These are all intangible things. You kind of know it when you see it, as one justice said, but very, very hard to bring out in the confirmation hearing. And certainly past confirmation hearings have not been very effective in actually predicting the kind of temperament that justices are going to bring to the bench.
In fact, the very public confirmation hearing could not be more at odds with the kind of mystery that shrouds all justices. We deliberately create kind of mysterious figures out of them. You attempted to determine the identity of Sotomayor by polling some of the people who have clerked with her. It's kind of like assessing buzz about a legendary sort of person in the kind of cloudy Olympian firmament. What was that like?
Well, it certainly was a controversial thing to try to do, and I guess I learned a lot from the experience. People who'd clerked with her for other judges and also prosecutors who'd appeared before her had said she could be kind of tough on the bench, and they felt that maybe she was a little hard to appear before. And then there's this resource called the Almanac for the Federal Judiciary, which is a kind of rate my professors for judges. Essentially, it pulls lawyers, and all the comments are anonymous, and they kind of ask people to talk about the temperaments of the judges. And there, too, many of Sotomayor's reviews were basically said she was tough on the bench and said maybe not as judicious as some of the other judges. But on the other hand, lots of people, as we've seen from the reaction to the nomination, just speak incredibly highly of her. Her colleagues say that they can get along really well with her. So figuring out exactly who has the full picture, who should be trusted, it's a hard thing to do, and I certainly wouldn't try to predict it with confidence in any way.
Although some of the quotes you got from those clerks are likely to be ammunition in the confirmation hearings, what's your reaction to that?
Well, I'm sorry about that, and I do regret the fact that conservatives are using that initial article as an argument against her, because I never intended it like that. The goal was just before the nomination came down to try to figure out what people thought of her temperament, which is the most relevant thing in nominating a judge. But I said then, and I've certainly said yesterday, and we'll say now that she absolutely should be confirmed. She's extremely well-qualified. There's really no good basis for opposing her, and I don't think she really will be opposed. I mean, the politics of this are so overwhelmingly positive that when the Republicans think about this, they're going to realize that they don't have much to stand on, and I think she's going to go through pretty well.
Well, we are asking people, Jeffrey, to call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org. We have these questions that come up. And the one we're asking now is, if you were sitting on a confirmation hearing, what question would you get to ask Judge Sotomayor? Again, 877-8-MY-TAKE. But now, since I've got you directly on the line, I'm going to ask you that question. If you were to take her to a confirmation hearing, well, what was your, what
Senator
would be
Rosen?
Yes,
Senator Rosen, you have the floor. Yes.
Senator Rosen would do a far worse job than the real senators, but I think I would ask, what do you think about a question like genetic selection or human cloning? I would really want to fast forward 20 years and not ask about abortion or the controversies of today, but the ones that are likely to come down the line. And there the alliances are so unusual when it comes to things like genetic selection. They're opposed both by social conservatives and also by feminists who think that genetic selection can lead to the favoring of boy babies over girls. So just by asking her to think about something that is not on the radar screen now but would really test her judicial philosophy, I think that could be really revealing.
Well, that brings in the whole issue of communications law. With the proliferation of all this kind of texting technology and all the ways we communicate, are there civil libertarian questions in there that you would want to get her answers on?
Wouldn't it be great to ask her about sexting? That would be a fun thing on the air, which is definitely in the cloud right now. But yes, indeed, the central question for the future of the First Amendment is that the great gatekeepers of the future are not going to be, unfortunately, the New York Times and the traditional media, but places like Google or Comcast, which blocked NARAL's pro-choice abortion messages. And what do you do when private companies have more power over free speech than the government used to? And how do you think about that? That's something that the next justice is going to have to think very deeply about.
I love how this Senator Rosen thinks, Farai. What do you think?
I think that we could go even a step further. If you have cloned yourself in order to produce an offspring legally, is that person your child, or is that person not your child?
You know, that is not at all a hypothetical question. People have noted that in the future, a gay couple might want to have a child who's biologically related to both men. So it'd be possible to take a cell from any part of the body, a stem cell, coax it from one man into an ovum, fertilize that with the sperm of the other man, have a child who's biologically related to both men. You can imagine people wanting to do that. What if Congress tried to ban that, said you can't have that sort of human cloning? Would that be constitutional or not? I mean, the mind reels, but really interesting to get a nominee to
wow.
think about that.
And,
sort
she,
of
and she hasn't even weighed in on the glow-in-the-dark kitty, which we also have, thanks to genetic manipulation. We've gone a little far afield here, but do you foresee that there's going to be anything that emerges that deals with race and ethnicity, specifically the fact that if confirmed, she will bring a Latino perspective into a court that has often viewed racial issues as black and white?
Yes, indeed. And there's one quote that has been getting a lot of attention. Justice Sandra Day O'Connor famously said, a wise old man and a wise old woman judge should reach the same result. And Sotomayor said, I would hope that a wise Latina woman with the richness of her experience would more often than not reach a better conclusion than a white man who hasn't lived that life. And that just raises all sorts of interesting questions about whether, it's true or whether the experience of Justice Clarence Thomas shows that you can be an African-American and not necessarily empathize in that sort of way. It's just a very rich, controversial debate that I'm sure will
sure
come
is.
Up a lot.
Well, finally, Jeffrey, I mean, she grew up in the Bronx in the shadow of Yankee Stadium, credited to have saved baseball during the strike in the 90s. What does that say to corporate lawyers who might be looking for her decisions on labor law on the court? Finally, before we go.
You know, I think this is really the central question because we don't have a single economic populist on the Supreme Court. Even the Democrats tend to be very pro-big business. My sense is, you know, she was a corporate litigator, so I haven't read all of her business opinions, but I'm not sure that she's an economic populist in the William O. Douglas model.
No, it's an interesting mystery. It's an interesting mystery and definitely a place to look, and we'll see if that comes up at the confirmation hearings. Jeffrey Rosen, as always, thanks so much for being on the program. Law professor at George Washington University, legal affairs editor for The New Republic. His story in this week's New Republic is called What's a Liberal Justice Now? What indeed? Thanks, Jeffrey.
Thanks. Always a pleasure.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.